Radio Hall of Fame. The Radio Hall of Fame is presented during the full hour ahead by Philco Corporation, makers today of radar and electronic battle equipment for the fighting forces of the United Nations. Makers tomorrow of equipment for good living in a free world united by victory. Each week, the editors and correspondents of Variety report and select for the Philco program the hits of the show world from all the fields of entertainment. This week, the editors of Variety recommend for your pleasure and Philco delights to honor in your name, from motion pictures and the concert stage, Jeanette MacDonald. From radio and motion pictures, Frank Morgan. From radio, Morton Downey. From the recording studios and radio, the Milhurst Trio. From radio, a distinguished cast in one of radio's outstanding plays. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, the distinguished composer, author, and commentator, Deems Taylor.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The overture on today's Radio Hall of Fame program is based on a song that is currently celebrating its 15th birthday, and yet still shows no signs of wear and tear. Paul Whiteman's Radio Hall of Fame Orchestra and Chorus unite to bring us Vincent Newman's Great Day.
In the days before the war, Philco was building radios for the homes and automobiles of millions of Americans. The goal of Philco research and manufacturing skill in those days was to give you finer tone, more thrilling performance, and greater radio values year by year. By those standards, Philco became America's favorite radio, the overwhelming leader in the industry for 12 straight years. Today, Philco is still building quality radios for millions of Americans, not for their homes, but for their planes, tanks, and ships. Philco engineering and manufacturing skill is now devoted to the task of making better and more ingenious radar and electronic equipment for our soldiers and sailors, helping give them the weapons of victory in the air and on land and sea. What Philco war research is adding today to the sum of man's knowledge in electronic science will bring you tomorrow new and greater delights in the enjoyment of radio and recorded music. And the Philco name will continue its tradition of leadership as a musical instrument of quality.
One evening, quite some years ago, when I was listening to Paul Whiteman's concert orchestra, a very young, innocent-looking lad who had been sitting in the back row of the brass section holding a French horn that he never played, suddenly rose from his place and began to sing. And that was the first time I'd ever heard the extraordinary tenor voice of Morton Downey. Since that time, that voice has been heard and applauded all over the Western world. And here's still another chance to hear it as the Radio Hall of Fame welcomes Morton Downey.
I needn't cling to this fear. It's merely that spring will be a little late this year.
That was a new song by Frank Lesser. Spring will be a little late this year. And now for another one. Morton, do you know what day this is?
That I do, Deems. It's Mother's Day.
Right. And in our studio audience today is an outstanding American war mother who has just won the Women on the Home Front Award. She's Mrs. Emma Van Kuykren, whose 3 daughters and 9 sons are all in the armed forces. And she wondered if you'd sing a song for her.
I'd love to. For Mrs. Van Kuykren and for all mothers, I'd like to sing Little Mother of Mine.
Sometimes in the hush of the evening hour, when shadows creep from the west, I think of the twilight songs you sang to the boy you loved the best. The wheeled lad with a tousled head that long, long ago was thine. I wonder if sometimes you long for that boy. Hardly know that he was the lad you loved with your slumber song. The years have altered the form of life, but the heart's unchanged by time, and still only your boy as a boy. Oh, little mother of mine.
Long ago, a variety scout, after a nocturnal visit to Billy Rose's Diamond Horseshoe, brought back a glowing report of the doings of a triple threat known as the Milt Hirth Trio. Mr. Hirth, the first to exploit and record the electric organ as a rhythm instrument, aided and abetted by Ernie Wright at the drums and Milt Green at the piano, plays everything from Mozart to Mercer in foot-tapping style. Wherefore, Philco has invited the Tuneful Three to visit the Radio Hall of Fame. And playing Mozart's Turkish March, here they are. Thank you. Written and produced for the first time 5 years ago, Milton Geiger's radio play, In the Fog, was adjudged the best short radio play of the year in Max Wiley's book, Best Broadcasts. In the opinion of Variety, it remains to this day one of radio's finest dramas. Chosen to enact this veteran radio play are some of the uncelebrated veteran actors of radio who regularly turn in performances that are not only workmanlike, but frequently distinguished. And I said distinguished. And so Folco is proud to honor and salute generally those unflagging and usually anonymous artists of the radio world, and as their specific representatives today, the following radio actors who will play the roles named. Thus, the Doctor, Santos Ortega. Zeke, Milton Herman. Eben, Edward Begley. The gas station attendant, Lawson Zerbe. Our narrator, Barry Kroger. We present these artists in the famous radio play, In the Fog.
It is a foggy night in the Pennsylvania hills. An automobile feels its way slowly through the darkness. Suddenly, the driver sees a swaying light, like some will-o'-the-wisp, swinging blurrily through the mist. Two men stand in the road, carrying heavy rifles. They seem to be wearing the coats of what had once been some sort of uniforms. One raises his rifle and points it at the oncoming automobile. The other raises his voice in a shout.
Hello there, Head.
Get out of the way. Look out.
Stop. In the name of mercy, stop.
Halter, I'll shoot.
All right. What do you want of me, money?
We don't want your money, mister.
We ain't aiming to hurt you.
Then why don't you put up your gun?
All right.
Very much obliged to you.
We don't want no trouble, mister.
Leastwise, killing. There's been killing enough, we say.
To last forever and a day.
Aye.
So you can rest your mind about it.
Well, that's reassuring.
What's your trade, mister?
My trade?
Aye. What do you do for bread?
I'm a doctor. Why?
You hear that, Eben? He's a doctor.
I hear it.
Doctor, he'd be just the man we're looking for.
He'll do proper, I'm thinking.
Better come out of that vehicle now.
Very well. You understand, don't you, that I'm not frightened by your guns? Don't think for a moment I won't bring this incident before the proper authorities.
We don't mean a mite of harm, stranger. The good Lord knows there's been grief aplenty done, and no fault of ours. No earthly fault of ours. Give my oath on it, stranger.
So will you come out of it peaceable-like?
Could powerful well use, doctor.
Why? Has someone been hurt?
It's for you to say if he's been hurt nigh to the finish, mister.
I'll come, of course. Let me get out. All right. Take me to your man. Where is he?
Yonder.
Under the tree where he fell. He's bad hurt, we're afeard.
I don't suppose you men would even consider my having a look at you. I'd like to know with whom I'm dealing.
Hold up your lantern, Eben.
Good Lord.
He's Eben. I'm Zeke.
What? But great heavens, man. What's happened? Has there been an accident?
Accident?
Your faces. Both streaked with blood. And those bandages around your head. Your hair and beard's matted with blood. What's happened?
Mischief's happened, stranger. Mischief.
It certainly looks that way.
Better be coming along, Doctor. This way, follow me.
Across the meadow, mister. Watch how you walk. It's rough going, Spots. Aye. Mischief aplenty. It's enough to last these parts a good long while in a day.
Keep together. Follow the lantern. Mind where you step. Keep close.
What must be, must be. There's no changing now or going back. And all that's left is wishing things were different.
There's been gunplay, hasn't there?
You ain't a-telling us there's been gunplay, mister.
But I am telling you that it's my duty to report this to the highway police. And report as I will.
Yes, mister. Do that.
Yes. You're arrogant about it now, aren't you? You're confident you won't be caught and dealt with. I tell you, people are losing patience with you men. You... Moonshine is running wild and shooting up the countryside.
You heard what he said, Eben?
I heard him.
Moonshiners.
Here we are. And there's your man, Doctor.
He ain't stirred a mite since we left him.
All right, let's get to work. Bring that lantern a bit closer, will you?
So?
Closer. That's good.
Got it spank in the chest, poor fella.
You should have done your commiserating with him before he was hurt. It's too late now. Here, help me with the shirt. No, don't pull. Just tear it. Fine. Now then, we'll have a look. Closer with the lantern. Hold it. Dreadful. Dreadful.
You reckon it's bad in a chest like that?
Bad enough. His pulse is positively racing. How long has he been like this?
A long time, mister. A long time.
Ever since sundown.
Hand me my bag, one of you. You.
Aye. It's coming.
Open it.
There you be, mister.
Now lend me a hand with these retractors. Just hold on to them. No, no, like this. So. Now. Draw back on them each time I tell you to. Till I order you to stop. Understand?
Reckon.
Now, draw back. More. More retraction. A little more. That's enough.
Is he very bad, Doctor?
I've never seen anything quite like it.
You're young, mister. Lots of things you've never seen.
That cotton, please.
Aye.
Thanks. Tape.
Here it is.
There. So much for that for a while, anyhow. Now then, get an arm under his shoulder, one of you.
What for?
What for? This man is dangerously wounded. That wound needs treatment. Thorough cleansing and irrigation, some sulfur treatment. We've got to get him to a hospital.
I reckon he'll be all right without no hospital.
You realize how much this man has been hurt?
He won't bleed to death, will he?
Probably not with that temporary dressing, but...
All right, then. We're much obliged to you, Doctor.
But I tell you, this man is desperately hurt. He needs attention.
Reckon he'll be all right now, thanks to you.
I'm certainly glad you feel that way about it.
We'll take care of our own from now on. Thanks.
I'll wager you will. It's a pretty safe bet you've killed men with those guns of yours, taking care of your own, as you put it.
If we killed, it was none of our own wishing, mister.
And that's a pretty safe bet, too.
What's done is done.
Fog is lifting, stranger. You better be on your way now. We don't want any more trouble.
That we don't. There's been trouble and a grieving enough. And we've had our share and more. We've killed. We've killed and we've been hurt back for it. We're not alone in what we've done, and we ain't to blame. You can go now, mister, and our thanks be to you. Thanks, mister. In the name of mercy, we thank you, doctor. In the name of mercy. In the name of mercy.
Just got it before we close up. Five's all I can give you. Five?
Oh, thank you. I've just been held up.
Honest?
A couple of ruffians armed with rifles. You've got a telephone handy? I want to call the state police.
What do they look like, anyhow?
An ugly pair. Beards all matted with blood. Faces covered with dirt and sweat. Crony of theirs with a gaping chest wound. They made me attend him. I'm a doctor, you know.
Ah, those fellas.
Oh, then you know about them. They're desperate, I tell you, and armed. The countryside ought to be warned.
How far back did this happen? A couple of miles, would you say?
Just about. Yes, will you show me your telephone and what was that town I just came through? I said, what town was that I just came through?
That was Gettysburg, mister.
Gettysburg?
Gettysburg and Gettysburg Battlefield. When it's light, you can see the gravestones. Meade's men, Pickett's men, Robert E. Lee's.
What about those men just now?
You're not the first they stopped, but the last.
Gettysburg and the restless dead.
Yes, sir.
What do they want?
I don't know, mister. But if I'm asked to die for my country, I know what I want. I want it to count.
That these honored dead...
That's right. Shall not have died in vain. Need a nickel for the telephone?
Oh, thank you. No. Thank you. And so, it is over. The tumult and the shouting, done. The slow fog drifts across the fields where men laid down their lives, each for his own ideal. The mist seeps out of the earth and clothes the graves. The winds blow, and ever and again, the silent snow keeps immaculate vigil at the tombs of heroes. Who knows what unseen drama passes in the night at Gettysburg? The guns are silent, yes. The Army of the Potomac, the Army of the Tennessee, the Army of Northern Virginia are gone, marching down the long, dark valleys into time's last ambush. Gone. Gone in all but memory and name. Pickett, Meade, and Lee, McClellan, Grant, Beauregard, Johnson. The guns of Shiloh and Vicksburg stand mute upon the village square. The bayonets and rifles of Antietam, Bull Run, or the Wilderness are rust, or bits of wood, or idle souvenirs above neglected mantles. But there are the dead, the restless dead, who fought and perished that a nation might endure. Let not their sleep be troubled. They stir. The tyrant's tread shakes the earth and shakes the sleepers there at Gettysburg, Arlington, the tragic beaches of Anzio and Tarawa, White Plains, Valley Forge, North Africa, wherever earth or ocean claimed our manhood. They watch. They wait. They listen. The power of the nation for which they lived and died moves to the channel ports, measures the leap to Europe, gauges the need, weighs the means. The hour draws near. The men who sleep at Gettysburg, at Anzio, Tarawa, and the rest await the issue. And the nation, armed and ready, stands astride the far-flung battlefields,
and in one mighty voice cries out, "Rest, heroes! Be at peace! We shall not fail! You have not died in vain."
You know, reading Poe's The Raven the other night, I'd forgotten that "Nevermore" is not the only refrain in that poem. For instance, the fifth stanza runs, "Deep into the darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back."
This is the Blue Network.
Last Wednesday saw the New York opening of a new RKO picture, Show Business, of which Eddie Cantor is not only the star, but the producer as well. And so today, as a salute to Eddie and his double career, the Radio Hall of Fame Orchestra and Chorus are going to play and sing one of the hit numbers of Show Business, the song "It Had to Be You." hardly expect the Fuller Brush Man to turn up later on as one of your favorite movie actors. And yet, peddling brushes was the first job that young Frank Morgan took when he left Cornell University at the age of 20. Then followed a frantic career as advertising and real estate salesman, stoker, and cowboy, until he decided to give up all that nonsense and become an actor, like his brother Ralph. You need hardly be told with what success he became one. Since 1933, the master of the double take, the slow burn, and the glib non sequitur, as Variety dubs him, has been in 50-odd pictures. His latest appearance being as one of the stars of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's The White Cliffs of Dover. And so today, with an anticipatory grin, Philco welcomes him to the Radio Hall of Fame. We take you now to Hollywood and Frank Morgan.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and good evening.
Buenas noches, Juanito.
Mr. Tours, would you roll that at me again, please?
Oh, with pleasure, old boy. Buenas noches, Juanito.
It doesn't improve with age.
Something wrong with my accent?
Tours, that sounds like nothing so much as the label on a can of chili being read by a Welshman through the shaggy end of one of Mr. Churchill's cigars. What brought all this about, anyway?
Well, old cabbage, I'm planning a visit to our nearest good neighbor.
I'm
going to Mexico City at the first opportunity.
Well, are you taking Mrs. Tours along?
Well, yes and no.
Yes and no what?
Yes and no way out of it.
I see. Well, I hope she is more familiar with things Latin than you are, Maestro. We don't want to give Maxwell House a bad name on the other side of the Rio Grande.
Yes, I must confess, my acquaintance with Mexican life is confined to their cuisine.
It is,
Well, that is most exciting. Why, I know a couple of hot little Mexican dishes.
You do? Well, see if they've got a friend for me. Greetings, my CD playmates. And how does one contact these tantalizing tamales? In a nice way, of course.
I hate to ruin your evening, Morgan.
Why?
But we were not discussing women.
Why?
We were talking about Pan-American relations.
Oh.
And that kind of love is all brotherly.
Well, that's all brotherly.
Come back here. Pancho, haven't you any interest in your good neighbors to the south?
No. There's a blonde about a block east who occasionally leaves her shades up.
Mr. Morgan.
Oh, well, what is it, my ghastly gargoyle?
I find your preoccupation with the fair sex distinctly embarrassing.
Embarrassing?
Aren't you ashamed chasing girls at your age?
Unfortunately, at my age, you have to chase them.
That's not a perquisite of age, Frank.
No?
No.
Why?
My grandfather neither drinks, touches tobacco in any form, nor so much as looks at women.
Oh.
And tomorrow he's going to celebrate his 85th birthday.
He is?
How?
Well, while you're scraping up $64 for that last question, I shall spend a racy half hour with my pressed fern collection. Good day, sir.
Oh, don't go. Don't go, Mr. Morgan.
No?
I wanted to ask your advice about something.
Oh?
And it's rather personal.
Good heavens, Tours. Didn't your mother ever tell you anything?
You don't understand. I'm planning a trip to Mexico City, and I thought you might...
Say no more, Tours. You've inadvertently stumbled upon a veritable mine of Mexicana, a compendium of Hispanic culture of which I am the definitive edition.
You are.
Fascinating, yes. Mr. Morgan. Obviously, you're the man to advise me on my trip to Mexico.
I am? I mean, I am. Although it seems that here I am underrated, in Mexico, they still talk the swath I cut in the gay life of the capital.
Swath.
From the nightclubs and cafes to the frontons where the fascinating game of high lie is played.
And I suppose it's inevitable that you were a high lie expert.
Oh, inevitable in a man of my amazing physical development and manual dexterity, yes.
I thought so.
In 2 short months, I mastered that difficult game, and by the end of my first season, I was hailed as Mexico's outstanding high liar. Get in here.
It might interest you to know, Pancho, that I have spent my last 4 vacations in Mexico City furthering the studies of Mexican history, which formed my major in college.
Mexican major.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you wish to check this, just drop a line to the hotel where I retain a suite.
Yeah.
It's located on the corner of the Calle de Paris and the Paseo de la Reforma, the Hotel Reforma.
Why, Jackie boy, why this tirade? I've no doubt you know Mexico City as well as I. Please don't apologize.
I apologize?
Well, if you insist on humbling yourself, I accept. My mood is one of gentle forgiveness, Jackie, brought on by your casual mention of the Paseo de la Reforma.
It was the scene of an amorous adventure with a slow-eyed bit of fluff, which I shall never forget.
Yeah?
Every detail comes back to me. The star-splashed night when I walked with her along the paseo to her hotel.
Reformer?
No, her mind was bent on necking. I don't... Hotel. No, jockey, she owned an elaborate hacienda on the outskirts of the city, bearing her family crest over the great front gate.
Really?
El Motel Cucaracha, I think it was.
I see. You didn't feel out of place among such aristocracy then, huh?
My boy, I'd have you understand that a Morgan is as good as any cucaracha in the world.
Yeah. Well, I'll buy that, brother.
Where did you say you stayed, Mr. Morgan?
I didn't say, and don't intrude upon the conversation, please. You know the aphorism about too many cooks, tours?
Oh, I say, cooks, tours. A neat whimsy, that.
The last man I heard laugh like that never returned from the blood bank. Where were we?
At El Motel Cucaracha.
Oh, yes. Prompted by pure nostalgia, I returned to the tiny room which I had occupied on a previous trip when I studied art with Diego Rivera, Orozco, and the others of the fast palette and brush set.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
You studied art with Rivera?
Well, I helped the kid get started, yes. There was the easel upon which I created my first masterpiece, a gouache in the style of Merida. For subject, I had chosen my current mother-in-law. This pastiche I hung in a conspicuous place on the wall over a large gaping hole, hoping my landlord would see, covet, and accept it in lieu of rent. The moment he set eyes on it, he snatched it off the wall.
He wanted to buy the painting of your mother-in-law?
No, he said the hole looked better. Although hurt, I was forced to agree, as my mother-in-law was not exactly beautiful.
She was.
No, she... In fact, she was a sort of a Wallace Beery with curls.
Right. Is nothing sacred to you, even your own family?
No, I'm sorry, jockey. Come to think of it, she did have a type of beauty all her own.
Well, it's better.
Her face looked as though some ancient master had sculpted it out of fine clay.
Yeah?
And then dropped it while it was still wet.
Well, I give up.
I'll never give up, jockey. Had I been as spineless as you, I should have remained a penniless, struggling artist. Instead of capitalizing on my natural talents to build a career as the most daring bullfighter in all Mexico.
Bullfighter?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Quiero que sí, but yes.
Frank, you're not going to tell me that you were a toreador.
Are you serious, Jackie?
Yes, I'm serious.
For generations, my family has been connected on the distaff side with the bull ring.
They have.
Beginning with my great-great-grandfather, El Señor Don Morgan, and including my grandfather, Broken Don Morgan.
Broken Don Morgan.
Yes. A great rancho is maintained exclusively for the breeding of Andalusian fighting bulls by my Uncle Frijole and my Aunt Serapi.
Serapi?
I never liked her. She was a sort of a wet blanket.
Oh. But you, Mr. Morgan, did you actually become a matador?
Yes, Stuart. I entered the ring at an early age, and soon all Mexico was ringing with encomiums of my skill and daring.
Unbelievable.
Yes, isn't it? But I scored the greatest success of my career last summer when I returned to the scene of my former triumphs, the Plaza de Toros in Mexico City.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
You fought a bull last summer?
At the special request of the Mexican government, I consented to give a farewell performance. What an ovation I received. The cheers were deafening. The audience was composed largely of women, of curious.
Yeah.
As I entered the arena, I was recognized instantly, and 3,000 women stood up as one and cried, oh!
Oh, no.
I mean, ole, ole, ole. That's... Bravo, with Tabasco on it.
And what happened then?
Preliminaries over, the bull was released, and for a moment, even I blanched as I saw I was facing the notorious killer El Diablo.
El Diablo?
Bandarillos bristled from his muscular back, but he had eyes for no one but me. I brandished my muleta, and he charged.
But you eluded him neatly, flourishing your cape to the gallery.
Stop reading over my shoulder, jockey. Even my nimble footwork was inadequate to cope with this vicious beast, and he cornered me. I called to one of my assistants.
Picador?
No time. I jumped over the fence. Oh, Picador. Well, I simply wanted my rapier. El Diablo pawed the ground, eyes blazing, nostrils distended. Suddenly he emitted two brief olfactory exhalations.
What's that?
A couple of short snorts.
I'll have a short beer.
Collar on it?
No, I'm going scorches.
Well, that'll be 25 cents. Why are we talking?
Do go on, Mr. Morgan. I'm all ears.
And a pity it is, too, Torres. Once again, El Diablo rushed, and just as I was about to plunge my rapier into his shaggy shoulder, I lost my footing and fell.
Oh.
He was about to gore me when my amazing presence of mind came to my rescue. I spoke one word to the enraged beast, and he stopped in his tracks.
Well, what did you say?
Moo. suppose a gentleman, he wouldn't strike a lady. Well, goodbye.
Frozen foods and frozen storage. A new technique in modern food processing and preparation. Millions today are beginning to understand its vital importance in the household of tomorrow. But even before the war, Philco engineers recognized this modern trend. In designing the Philco refrigerator, they led the industry in offering you a complete line of refrigerators with full-size frozen food compartments. Not mere miniature additions to the ice cube chamber, but a huge, separately enclosed space where foods of all kinds can be kept for weeks at below freezing temperatures. For the future, this is evidence of Philco's leadership in advanced design. When its engineers return from war research to their peacetime tasks, you can look to the Philco refrigerator of tomorrow for the most modern conceptions of frozen storage in the home. And in addition, for new ideas and advanced design that will bring to the modern kitchen new standards of convenience and utility in home refrigeration.
Remember that Jeanette MacDonald began her career not as a singer nor an actress, but as a dancer. In fact, she was earning her living as a dancer while she was preparing to be a singer. From bit parts as a dancer, she quickly rose to stardom in musical comedy. Then came a Paramount screen test, which gave her her first picture, co-starring with Maurice Chevalier in Ernest Lubitsch's The Love Parade. I won't read off the list of her pictures from then on. You need no such reminder. Instead, Philco, welcoming her to the Radio Hall of Fame, presents her in a medley arranged for her by Theodore Weingand of some of the songs that have helped to make the name of Jeanette MacDonald world famous.
Thank you. let your queen be heard by all.
Greater Philco products of the future, we express a hope for tomorrow that gives us constant incentive for our tasks of today. In the production of radar and communications equipment, artillery fuses and shells, storage batteries for war plants and landing craft, The men and women of Philco are devoted to a single objective, helping to give our valiant men at the front the striking power that will bring them victory. To that end, they serve each day the Philco War Production Pledge, more, better, sooner. Next week, another brilliant gathering of stars with Bob Hope, Jane Froman, and the Art Tatum Trio, as well as the Paul Whiteman Orchestra and Chorus, and others. This is Glenn Riggs saying goodbye for Philco dealers and distributors throughout the United States and Canada, and from Philco Corporation, makers today of radio and electronic materials to help win the war, makers tomorrow of materials for good living in a world at peace. John Conte appeared through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of the White Cliffs of Dover. Frank Morgan, John Conte, and Frank Tours appeared through courtesy of Maxwell House Coffee Time. Morton Downey is sponsored by Coca-Cola Bottlers. The production staff of the Radio Hall of Fame includes Dee Engelbach, producer-director, and Abel Green, editor of Variety. This is the Blue Network.